Welcome to News Over Brews, the only podcast that breaks down the best of this week's pop culture over a nice cold beer. Sponsored by PopBreak.com. I am your host and moderator, Al Manarino. On this week's episode, we talk about the planned gritty reboot of a classic 90s show. We also discuss the possibility of a Halo series coming to Showtime and review the latest single from Coldplay. And the story of a young Jim Gordon is the subject of this week's trailer talk. With me this week was built in a cave with a box of scraps, Ryan DeMarco.
Well, I'm not Tony Stark, but I am Iron Man.
And he is Vengeance, he is the Knight, he is Lucas Jones.
What do you want to kill me? What do you want to kill me?
Terrible comic book puns aside, Lucas, just tell us what beer we're drinking this week.
Well, Al, we picked up a beer that I've been looking to try for some time now. It's Green Flash's West Coast Double IPA. Comes in at 8.1% alcohol by volume and 95 IBU bitterness rating. It's a 4-pack of 12-ounce bottles, and what did we pay, Ryan? $10 for it?
Yeah, roughly.
Yeah, we paid about $10 for it. It uses 5 types of hops: Simcoe, Columbus, Cascade, Centennial, and Citra hops. Now, the nice thing about this beer, and Ryan was the first one to say it, he noted the bitterness of the beer, because we've had a lot of double IPAs before, and the bitterness is something we've come to expect. Ryan, why don't you give us what your thoughts were.
Well, upon smelling it, you definitely get that hoppy, fruity scent. I got some pineapple, a little grapefruit. It was very, very off choice fruits. So anyway, I found it to be a little underwhelming. It was very, very wasn't overwhelming, but it was a little under hoppy in a way. So I found that very surprising since it was a double IPA. Wasn't exactly what I was expecting, though.
Well, the you said you got grapefruit notes off this?
Yeah, the aroma.
Learn well, you have. Becoming stronger, you are.
The grapefruit actually comes from the Simcoe hop, which is the primary hop that's used in this beer.
Oh, baby.
Yeah, so you're right on the money there. You got Simcoe gives you your fruity zest. Columbus is your pungent, your aroma. The Centennial hop gives you like a pine, a little bit of a woody taste to it.
Oh, I certainly got that from
yeah.
this.
Yeah. Citra is your citrus. So again, some more citrus flavors there. And Cascade gives you that floral aroma that I just absolutely love in an IPA. Whenever I smell an IPA and I smell like floral, woodsy, outdoor, I know I'm in for a treat. I really liked this beer. It was something that, like Ryan said, wasn't overwhelming with bitterness, which allowed the nuanced flavors of the 5 hops and the balance between them to really shine. You get a little bit of all of them. And on the bottle, it says, you know, 5 layers of hops. That's what it is. It's flavors that are layered together to create one kind of experience. And what you get is a nice balanced IPA that, again, hides the ABV. It doesn't taste like an 8% beer. It tastes like, you know, like a 60 minute almost.
Yeah.
But more on the floral side.
It's very tame.
Yeah. It's definitely tame. And you know, don't mistake tame for bad. You know, I would definitely rate this beer very highly, like at a 7.5 or an 8 out of 10. When we say things like underwhelming and tame for this beer, we just mean that we were expecting something crazier in terms of bitterness. And getting a nice balanced beer is actually refreshing, both figuratively and literally.
That was a good one.
You know, yeah.
I'm gonna write that one down.
Yeah, a little turn of a phrase for you folks that are fans of the pun out there. Ryan, any more thoughts on this beer?
You kind of hit the money on the head, hit the nail on the head. I don't know what kind of money you hit on the head. Not exactly what I was asking. Tamer, but refreshing. Honestly, I would give this a 6.5 out of 10.
All right, so check it out. Keep on the lookout for it. It comes in a squat bottle with a purple label. Yeah, if you're a fan of IPAs, I would give this one a shot, especially if you're a fan of floral-hopped IPAs. As far as, you know, weekly food pairings go, we had we paired it with sweet and sour beef jerky and some peanut butter cheese crackers. But
wow.
I would recommend that if you're at a convenience store and you find this beer. But as far as a more prepared outing goes, I probably would recommend something along the lines of like some grilled chicken. Maybe like a grilled chicken club sandwich if you're having one for lunch or for dinner, you know, something grilled with maybe some roasted vegetables.
Yeah.
You know, like a grilled iceberg salad or some grilled asparagus, some roasted eggplant, something a little lighter, a little, you know, roasted, that nice grill flavor. So that's what I would recommend. But that's it for Green Flash West Coast IPA. Definitely worth the wait.
Thank you, Lucas, for that great review. Unfortunately, I was unable to have that beer because A, I'm about 2 hours away from you guys, and B, they didn't have it at my liquor store. So moving on, as I weep into this other beer, we're going to go into our first bit of news. We're going to talk about some television news. Over the last couple months, Microsoft has teased us with the possibility of a Halo TV series produced by Steven Spielberg. Now, that is every nerd's dream. Speaking as a nerd, speaking as a Halo fan, and just a fan of geek culture in general, when Spielberg's behind a project, you know it's going to be pretty good. So, recent news has surfaced that the show would not only air on Xbox, but now they're going to share a partnership with Showtime, and that they're in deep negotiations, which means that this has probably been going on for a while. And I mean, this is incredible news. You know, Showtime has brought us some great shows over the last couple of years. We had Dexter, Ray Donovan, Shameless, Episodes. I can go on. You know, it's a very, like, the perfect place for a live action Halo series to be on. We don't want it on NBC. We don't want it on Fox. We want this, you know, on a very not adult orientated. I mean, because obviously it's going to draw kids to watch this series, but I mean, we want an hour long drama without commercials, with, you know, a lot of violence, a lot of action, and great story. And that's what Showtime is, you know, what they're known for. So, guys, I know you're both obviously excited about seeing Master Chief on the television screen. Lucas, as a fan of the game, do you think the series will be able to be adapted well? And would you rather see the actual game be adapted, or a new, you know, based off the book series, or maybe just the whole original idea itself?
Well, first of all, I just want to draw attention to the fact that you said it's coming out for Xbox and maybe on Showtime. Like, just this TV show is going to be out on Xbox. Like, just that statement just shows how far the whole gaming industry has come in, you pick a random time span, 5 years, you know, like that just, oh, it's going to be out on your game system. You know, just that statement alone is pretty cool. As far as your question, you know, there was a mini series that was done.
Forward Unto Dawn?
Yeah, Forward Unto Dawn. And man, was that cool. You know, it wasn't about Master Chief so much.
Not until the end.
And I think that's would be a good formula for the show. Master Chief sparingly. Because, all right, so take a game like Halo 3, for instance. You're a Master Chief, and you're just battling through swarms of enemies. And, you know, you can jump really high, you're really strong, you're really fast, you can, you know, do all this stuff. That's not so much a scary experience or like a tension-building experience when you're playing as Master Chief. When you played ODST, there was more tension in that game because you were just a regular person and the enemies were more overwhelming. And so I think that if the television series focused less on Master Chief and less on the video games and helped to, A, fill in some detail about the story outside of the video game canon, and B, focus more on the regular troopers with Master Chief coming along for certain parts, I feel like it'll be a really successful show.
All right. Well, two things. One, I just want to make a small correction.
Okay.
So it would probably air on Showtime first, then Xbox.
Okay.
But still, very cool concept to think, wow, there's going to be a television series and it's only available on my game console. Yeah, I completely agree with you. We would never have thought of that, you know, years ago, but because of Netflix and streaming services, you know, that it's kind of been a part of, you know, integrated into everything, our phones, our game systems, all that. And then the other thing I want to say is I completely disagree with you on the concept. I mean, I think you'd have to focus on Master Chief. That is the main reason I think people enjoy Halo, besides the gameplay, you know, is the character itself, you know, Cortana and all the surrounding characters. I think if you do kind of like a, almost like a Dexter format, where you have Dexter, but then you also had Miami Metro and a focus on the individual characters. You got to have Chief, he'll be the main character, but then surround him with some very, you know, very interesting ODST characters. And then I think that would be great. Which kind of brings me into my question for Rye. Rye, you know, in around 2008, producer Peter Jackson was hired. He was producing a live action Halo series, and then he had then unknown director at the time, Neil Blomkamp, to direct the movie, like his prodigy. And, you know, it fell short. You know, they couldn't do it. Something happened or whatever. And we ended up getting District 9, which is okay by me because I love that movie.
I guess we'll settle with that.
I guess we'll settle with that phenomenal Academy Award winning, Academy Award nominated movie. Regardless. Do you think that a Halo television series is the right move, or would you have rather seen a Halo movie?
You know, it's a good question. I think the smarter move was the TV series. But, of course, you know, the fans would always, you know, they'd throw their money at a Halo movie. Like, can you just imagine, like, a Kickstarter Halo movie? My God.
I don't even think they would need to do it, honestly.
$1 trillion in, like, a minute. But, like, you know, this is interesting because, personally, because negotiations kept, you know, building everyone's interest and then just kind of crashing and burning dozens of times. I remember hearing, you know, all right, they're at it again. Here comes another Halo attempt at a movie. I think, you know, given the success of Netflix and everything, it's really becoming, and given, you know, we've discussed this multiple times, how TV is sort of getting on the same level as movies now. This is the right move, I think. This is the appropriate move. They can play with it so much, and you were saying centering it on Master Chief and like a group of like maybe soldiers, that'd be great. Like I kept thinking like a mixture of Dexter and 24 in a way.
That'd be cool.
Sounds kind of crazy, but like they can, given a TV, like a movie comes out once every 2-3 years, you know, they kind of throw a ton of ideas into one thing, possibly jamming it down. They really don't know what they're going to do next. This, they can lay down a story season after season. They can build upon things which movies can't do. I think this is, given the atmosphere, the fan base, the content of this mega popular series, this is the smart move, and this will win it for Showtime. This is a bold step from them. This is a game changer for them. Halo is tremendously huge. This is bigger. They do more down small scale type things, more bottle series. This is a huge series, and I think this will change everything.
That's true. I couldn't agree more. I would think that if this is successful, which Microsoft won't let it not be successful, this is their biggest franchise.
Yeah, this will definitely hit its mark.
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, this is also going to be not a big risk for Showtime. This can be Showtime's Game of Thrones. You know, like, that's HBO's flagship series right now. So Showtime doesn't have that anymore with, you know, with Dexter leaving and all these other series kind of trying to fill the void that Dexter left. So they really need, you know, something to kind of take over, and this would definitely be it.
Well, I mean, I would almost disagree that it's not I think it's a huge risk. And it's a risk because if it's done anything less than sublimely, there's going to be huge backlash. Because, all right, so look at your core demographic, the people that you know are going to be watching regardless, right? And so for the TV show, you want to try to draw in that other audience to make it successful. But you can't forget about the core audience that's going to watch regardless, because if they don't like it, they're going to rebel against it. And I think that's where you have to, like we've all been kind of touching on, is striking the right balance between the how much chief. How much chief is too much chief? You know, I like the point that I think Ryan just made about 24, that how it was like it was Jack Bauer, but not all the time. And there would be almost episodes where he's not in the episode for 10, 15 minutes, and then he'll pop back in. You know, but the, like I said, they should really take the Forward Unto Dawn miniseries as a roadmap for what needs to be done. You know, Chief is the super soldier, but if he becomes an end-all, be-all to all problems, then the show will kind of decline. Kind of like how, in this last season of Doctor Who, the sonic screwdriver became, what's the phrase, deus ex machina. Like the thing that solves all the problems. If that's what Chief turns into, it's going to get really boring really quickly.
Well, my last contribution to this conversation is Forward Unto Dawn scored tremendously with critics and fans alike. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a perfect blueprint of how they should do the series. They kind of, I think they, now they have a solid sense of what the fans liked, what they didn't like, and how to shape a series out of that. So I think it's, you know, it's a high risk, as you said, but it's going to pay off tremendously. And I think they're, I think it's in safe hands. They're going to know Steven Spielberg's doing it. He gives you quality no matter what. I think it can't miss.
Well, I'm very excited. Obviously, we all are for this series, and we're going to keep you up to date with any news related to it. Check our Facebook page, and you know, we'll also update it when the news comes, and we'll probably be talking about it in some future podcasts. So stay tuned. Moving on to movie news. Now, over the last, I'm going to say, 5-10 years, we've been seeing this word come up a lot, reboot. We've seen a lot of 80s action movies get rebooted, like, I don't know, Everyone. But now the new trend is let's reboot failed 90s cartoons and live action movies. We are going to see, very soon, actually, this summer, we're going to see a already terribly reviewed adaptation of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, produced by Michael Bay. Just from the initial trailers, fans are flipping out. They are terrified. They do not want to see this movie. It looks terrible. Honestly, the Ninja Turtles look like weird,
like Shrek,
amphibious. They look like Shrek. Yes, good job, Ryan. They look like weird, like green dolphin humanoids. I can't even describe them. They're terrible.
Catch that one. I don't know what trailer you saw.
Well, I don't know. I saw the dolphin trailer. I think I was watching the Dolphin Tale 2 trailer, actually. but no. So we're getting a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. We're getting an adaptation of Gem and the Holograms, which is some 90s animated show. And now, most recently, we're going to get a reboot now of the Power Rangers, the original, you know, 90s live action show, which had a few movies. I grew up watching the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Like, literally, before I could speak, I was watching Power Rangers. It was my favorite show when I was younger, when I was like 3. And I watched it up until, I think, Power Rangers in Space. And every year after the first couple seasons, they started changing the title, the actors, the location, pretty much everything about the show. It kind of rebooted itself every year. I think like now they're up to like Megaforce or something. But you know, the show's been around for like 20 years, and I'm not excited because I'm not 3 anymore, but I'm definitely curious in to see what kind of reboot we're looking at here. So, my question to you guys is, are you excited for a Power Rangers reboot? And if so, why?
You want me to go? Excited for it? No. Was it needed? I guess at a certain standpoint, maybe on their end, they decided, listen, the gritty, more rough around the edges reboot is in right now. It's happened with James Bond. Disney's even doing it. I just watched The Lone Ranger, and that was pretty questionable for Disney's taste. You know, it was very suggestive in a lot of ways. Everyone's really into it right now. It's selling. So why not? Power Rangers time. Yeah, bring back, revive Jason David Frank's dead career.
But is it really dead? He's like one of the most cherished characters, you know, from the 90s. And he's actually he's a famous UFC fighter, and he's at every Comic-Con, and people, you know, line up around the building to see him. So I don't think he's a failed career. I think Power Rangers made him a household name.
Well, definitely. So he's not failed. I mean, that's his craft. Hey, you know what? If I was known for Power Rangers and I made that money, I would be okay with it too. But
true.
I'm not excited for it. I can't see. I mean, if it comes out, if it looks good, people will see. I can't see a lot of people just upon hearing this news like, yes, thank God they heard my prayers. Power Rangers is coming back big time. But it definitely, I will say it did need a different shift in direction because it was getting pretty bad. They were kind of riding the same. It was a one-trick pony. The masks would change, the animals would change, and it would just get retarded. It would be like the Megazord just stands there and hits you with a sword and it kills you, and hey, the Power Rangers win. It needed to change. So I guess it's necessary, but I'm not excited for it.
Man, you guys are depressing. And you guys call me the old one in the group. You know what? My inner child is extremely excited for this. And I'm excited because I can't wait to see what they'll do with it. I mean, granted, it's very easy to screw up at this point. You know, if they make it, like, super campy, it'll be like, oh, haha, but it won't be good. You know, if they want to take the Power Rangers idea and move it into a more dystopian world, you know, something just a little bleaker. Like, I'm not talking about, you know, putting the Power Rangers in the universe from the road or anything.
Well, I think they'll do anything but make it campy. If anything, their problem might be they might make it too serious.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta have a couple of nods to the camp of the original series. But, I mean, I'm excited to see what they'll do with it. You know, it's a cool concept. There's not much else besides the concept going on right now, so we'll have to wait and see. But as for the premise, the idea, I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, Luke, it's not that, you know, I'm too old now or not excited. It's just like, do we need it? No. The last movie that came out from Power Rangers, which I went to see in theaters, by the way, when I was six, 1997's Turbo, the Power Rangers movie, it made less than $10 million. Now, $10 million seems like a lot of money, but not for a movie. So,
yeah, but that was 1997.
Will a Power Rangers reboot bring in more money? Probably, because of nostalgia.
Titanic,
yes.
Titanic made $1 billion that year.
Titanic made $1 billion that year.
Yeah,
good
but
job,
in 1997 money, $1 billion is like the entire income of a small second world country.
All right. Regardless,
we're talking
what
about Power Rangers here, Lucas.
So a third world country.
What I'm saying is, I think this is obviously a smart move for you know, the creators of Power Rangers and whoever's behind it. Great. Is it needed? No. Is it needed like a live action Halo series? Absolutely not. But we're gonna keep you updated with this as well. Unfortunately, you know, you can catch updates on our Facebook page as well as probably in some future podcasts where we talk about how great Jason David Frank is. Moving on to this week's music review. Very excited about this one because I'm a huge fan of Coldplay and have been for several years. They have an upcoming album coming out at the end of May called Ghost Stories, and they've just released their second single, which is completely different than anything they've ever come out with before. A Sky Full of Stars, which was produced by none other than one of the hottest DJs around, Avicii. The song is more club than Coldplay, but it has kind of like a blend where, I mean, Ryan's already kind of confused. Like, can this be played in a club? Can it not be? I absolutely think it can, but it also stays true to, you know, Coldplay's, you know, musical style and, you know, their whole kind of stage presence. So I was absolutely thrilled with this new song, very excited about the new album. It's unfortunate that it's a very short album. It's only 9 tracks on the, like, the iTunes release, but there's bonus tracks, I think, at Target and maybe other stores. But still, I always hope for a larger album, like their last album, Milo Xyloto, or even before that, their critically acclaimed Viva La Vida. So what did you guys think? I know, Rye, you're a Coldplay fan like myself. What did you think of their latest single?
I was absolutely enthralled with it. I mean, what was the first single that came out?
Magic.
That was amazing. Listen, when, like, these first two, I mean, like I said, this is not going to be a big album. That's disappointing, but it's going to be very, it's going to be quality. I mean, when Every Teardrop's a Waterfall came out for Milo Xyloto, Lucas is laughing. I at first, I'll admit it, as a longtime Coldplay fan, I kind of questioned it a little bit. I was like, I don't know. But then I eventually fell in love with it, and the album became one of their best. This, however, no, I'm not having any doubt with it. I think it's going to be absolutely phenomenal. This song that came out, though, you and Lucas believe it's going to be jamming in the club with Kesha and Little Crapper, whoever is hot at that moment. I don't think this is going to be in the club at all. I think it's just, it's true Coldplay. Lucas mentioned the lack of lyrics, which, you know,
it's like 4 lines in the whole song.
If you listen to the middle of it, there's more. However,
5 lines.
It's classic Coldplay. You know, you got that. You got that Chris Martin screaming for his life. It's like he's being dragged away. He's got that. He's got such a pull, his voice. But I think it's a brilliant song. I cannot wait to hear the rest of it. I'll be at Target and whoever has the extra albums, extra bonus tracks. I think it's fantastic. Go ahead, Lucas. Butcher it away.
Well, first, I want to make a bet with you.
Go ahead.
I bet you that this song will be in the club by the end of the month. You will, I'll even let
by
you name
the, by the end of May.
Now. By the end it's of probably May, already in the club.
Because it,
and
it
I feel like you guys are thinking a club is like one place. There is a bunch of clubs.
Well, I
just
use
to
the
let
club
you know.
As in whatever club that we're in, because we can only be in one club at once.
As a PG-13 bet, I will buy you a drink. If I hear this in the club and you're with me,
mm-hmm.
I will just drop whoever I'm with. I will run right over to you, and I will buy you whatever you want.
Well, you heard it here. You heard it here first. Is Ryan owes me a drink if we hear it in the club. Okay. So I listened to it. I'm going to level with you guys.
Is that your first Coldplay song you actually listened to the whole thing?
No, unfortunately. I've had the misfortune of hearing other Coldplay songs before. I'm not a Coldplay fan in the slightest. Al mentioned their critically acclaimed album Viva La Vida, which rested on the back of the single Viva La Vida, which, as real musicians know, was ripped off of Joe Satriani's song If I Could Fly. If you get a chance, there's a number of comparisons on YouTube. Take a listen.
Most people don't know who Joe Satriani is, and they are great people.
As far as just this song goes, I thought it was pretty cool. Oh, you guys didn't see that one coming,
oh
did you?
Oh, my God. We got a couple things down in writing.
You know, I'm, as much as I love, like, heavy metal and, like, cheesy 80s, we spent like, 5 or, like, 10, 15 minutes listening to, like, Great White and Slaughter and Skid Row before the podcast.
Yeah.
I love club music. I love dubstep. I love house music. I love dance. I love, like, trance music. So the fact that this Coldplay song is, like, dance, trance, club style, produced by Avicii, whose name I recognized after only 3 or 4 minutes of trying to remember who Avicii was. I liked it. But, you know, I don't... Whenever Coldplay tries for anything besides this, whatever genre they're supposed to be in, I generally don't care for it. I find it to be shallow, boring, and pedantic. But this was cool. I like this little club thing. They should do more club music.
We'll be in the club.
I'm very, very happy that Lucas actually liked the Coldplay song. I'm very surprised that Ryan doesn't think an Avicii song is going to be in the club, And I'm also incredibly excited about this album, which comes out at the end of May. So stay tuned for that. We'll probably review that whole album in the next week or two. And yeah, check that out. Going into our last segment of the podcast, and our pretty much our only segment at this point, trailer talk. This week we wanted to change it up a little bit and talk about a television trailer. One of the most anticipated new series that's going to be coming out soon is Gotham, which focuses on a young Jim Gordon as he has, you know, as he starts up in the police in the Gotham City Police, and he encounters, you know, Batman's villains younger, along with Bruce Wayne himself as a kid, and Selina Kyle, Catwoman, all their younger selves. Now, the first trailer was, you know, really, really good. Kind of introduced the whole concept. It's almost like, if you're a comic fan, an Elseworlds story. They're showing Jim Gordon as kind of like Batman Year One, but a flip, like a twist to it, kind of taking a cue from Christopher Nolan's Batman Begins, where Gordon was the cop that kind of talks to Bruce Wayne after his parents died. They kind of take it a step further as he's the one who gets to investigate the Wayne's murder. And, you know, young Bruce Wayne and young Selina Kyle are going to be characters in this, as well as younger versions of Batman's Rogues Gallery, which is crazy to think about. We see, like, young versions of the Penguin, and I know they announced a bunch of other villains as well. So for anyone hoping to see Batman in this story, you're not going to, ever. It's never going to happen. This is going to be focused strictly on James Gordon becoming the, you know, Commissioner Gordon, pretty much. So we're never going to see this tie in with Arrow and The Flash that are both on the CW. This is a Fox series, I believe, so that wouldn't happen regardless. And But nonetheless, I'm really excited. I've always been a fan of Ben McKenzie. We've talked about this on a past podcast. You know, he was on The OC, he was on Southland. He's a great actor, very underrated. And I'm excited to see him kind of carry his own series. Now, what did you guys think of the footage from the first trailer?
Mostly I was pleased.
It pleases you.
It pleases me. Seeing Ben McKenzie in a lead role surprised me. I didn't think... I'm not convinced he can carry a series of this magnitude on his shoulders. I mean, if done right, I could say this series would last 6 to 8 seasons. I'd say Fox, if... Like almost like Halo. If they strike the right note, they got themselves a winner. But I hope they don't tie it closely, like as closely as Smallville. I hope they kind of do their own thing. Smallville obviously lasted a long, long time because
10 seasons.
Not many shows get that far. But you know, this is obviously Batman has always had a more popular grasp on the public, so I think this will be very, very popular when it comes out. Whether it holds that demographic is up to them, how they carry the show. I am a little concerned, though. The trailer kind of ruins a couple aspects. It shows you... Well, first, it kind of shows you exactly how the show is going to go, which, you know, you kind of expected, but it also gives away a lot of the villains. Like, I think it would have been fun if you kind of don't know, and then you kind of guess along the way, oh my god, this guy's going to become the Riddler. Oh my god, this is going to be the Penguin. Like, they kind of... It's a wonderful marketing strategy. I understand that, because, you know, oh my god, they're going to have Penguin and Riddler and all those people, and oh, I got to watch it. But, you know, I think it kind of ruins... It takes away from the story a little bit. Having said that, I'm really excited for it. I'll be watching it. It adds more to the Batman universe. It gives Jim Gordon especially more character depth and more stories and more plot threads, especially for the villains, the Rogue Gallery, as you said, which is very exciting. They've never done that. I'm excited to see what they do with it. I hope it's a good job. I need a good TV show to watch. I'll be anticipating this one. Lucas?
Well, as someone who doesn't follow the Batman comic books, it'll be nice to kind of get into a little bit of a backstory on the characters. What I mean, and again, as someone who doesn't follow the Batman comic books, but has a grasp on what they usually entail, it'll be interesting to see how they incorporate what's already considered to be Bruce Wayne and Jim Gordon's backstory into the TV show. As we talked about with Star Wars, they're pretty much ignoring the expanded universe in favor of their own storyline. So what will this show bring to the table in terms of storyline? But I think it'll definitely be good for a couple of seasons. Although I think a good strategy for them would be to figure out what story they want to tell, tell it, and end it. Don't have this turn into a How I Met Your Mother show where it just keeps going on and on and on and on and on. Because you could, if it drags on too long, you'll never be able to end it. So figure out the story you want to tell, tell it, go out on a high note.
Definitely. And I'm once again, this is a show that's definitely on my top radar along with The Flash. And I'm going to just do a little quick rundown of just in the last few hours, they've actually named some shows that have already been picked up for series. So I just want to give a quick update before we end this podcast. Obviously, Gotham, The Flash, Constantine, the very popular comic series that was turned into a terrible movie, is actually getting made into a TV series, and it looks like it's following the books more. That has been picked up. Also, very exciting news for fans of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Lucas, you can sigh. They've actually renewed Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a second season, as well as picking up Marvel's Agent Carter, which focuses on Peggy Carter from Captain America, and it's going to show her like creating S.H.I.E.L.D. along with Howard Stark. So that has been picked up for a series as well. So there's a lot of exciting comic book adaptations coming out. Also, I don't know if we ever talked about it, but Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg are producing a adaptation of Preacher. So this is a very great time to be a fan of comic books.
If you haven't been already from the dozens and dozens and dozens of movies that have come out.
Very true. Now, but that's it for us here at News Over Brews. I'm Al Manarino, and I'm possibly a superhero. I don't know, though.
I'm Ryan DeMarco, and I'm going to go to the seafood market. Hopefully I don't pull a muscle.
I'm Lucas Jones, and I just want to take a second, let's take a step back from the microphone and just appreciate the pun that Ryan DeMarco just dropped at our feet.
Look at that.
That was a great pun. It was a good pun. Thanks for listening.